Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and in the process support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason. And today, some exciting news. We have Interpretive Ranger Junior coming to us all the way from Tyler State Park. Junior, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
So, quick question. I started asking this question probably about two or three state parks ago. How is the mosquito and horsefly season going so far?
I'm actually unaffected here.
Really?
Well, yeah. Horseflies, haven't seen them. I did see them in the beginning of spring, but haven't seen them since. Mosquitoes, we have a lot of dragonflies and a lot of bats here, so mosquitoes are bare to none.
Nice.
I go on my hikes and I'm not bothered at all. I don't even have to spray myself down. I'm okay.
Oh man, I'm up there. I'll be there tomorrow.
Hey, come on down.
Hey, I don't know if you've listened to some of the episodes, but or looked at the fine print of the podcast invitation, but I have a goal to hike with, share the trail with every guest on the podcast. So absolutely, I will be down and we will be sharing the trail.
Yes, let's do it. Let's do it. I got tons of programs and I got plenty of time.
Nice, nice, nice. So as we've started doing it, I guess over the last month or two, we have a lightning round, and the listeners know that, Junior, you have not seen these questions. They are first words that come to your mind fast as possible, and if it's not too lightning-y, I don't know if that's a word, through the magic of edit, we will make it as fast as we can.
Okay.
So are you ready for these secret questions?
Go for it.
All right, here we go. Most underrated trail in the park.
Ooh, easy loop.
Funniest visitor question you've ever been asked.
The funniest question that I've ever been asked was, we were under a boil water notice, and I was asked if they could still swim in the lake.
Go-to hiking snack?
It has to be trail mix, right?
Yeah, I guess.
No, it's not. It's definitely not my go-to snack. I was just trying to be funny. Go-to snack has to be like Oreos. I love Oreos.
Oh, wow. I would have to try that one out.
Oh, I love Oreos.
Wildlife you're always happy to spot at the park.
Snakes. Any reptiles.
Do you have a lot of snake encounters?
Sadly not, but I do see a lot of reptiles. So I could be teaching a program about trees. And if I see a lizard, oh, I stop mid-sentence and I'm like, oh my God, look at that. And it also plays a part because I have a squirrel brain, so I go from like that.
Yep. Hey, I don't know if you are familiar with the Lone Star Hiking Trail. It's the longest trail in Texas. Both endpoints are an hour from my house. I think it's 96.4 miles hiking the main trail, 128 miles if you did all the loops. And from my hiking season, due to the horseflies, starts actually this weekend. And it goes into about May or June whenever, you know, the horseflies are not as crazy as they really get in the summer. And I would say from now until probably almost December, I bat 1,000 running into snakes on the trail.
Really?
Copperheads, water moccasins, coral snakes. And it's funny that usually you don't see them until you either almost step on them or, you know, you're kind of flying by them on the trail, and they're the ones that, you know, move away from you. But, oh, if you want to be almost guaranteed to see a snake, get on the Lone Star Hiking Trail. It's made up of 15 trailheads, so you can really customize your hiking experience, whether it's overnight, whether it's just day hikes. And man, it is snake heaven down here.
Love snakes. I love teaching about snakes. The time I do see snakes here at the park, they're mainly non-venomous. We do have venomous species here, but I mainly run into non-venomous.
Nice. All right. What is one thing that visitors always forget to bring?
Water.
Tent camper or hammock camper?
Ooh. It depends on the year that we're talking, but if I'm at the pick, it's going to be hammock.
What's louder, frogs at night or kids in the morning?
Frogs.
One word that best describe Tyler State Park?
Adventure. I got so many, but adventure would definitely have to be one.
All right, give me another.
A beautiful.
Sunrise or sunset at the park?
Sunset.
Yes or no, because I know sometimes this is really private information. Do you have a favorite fishing spot in the park?
Yeah.
Most surprising wildlife sighting that you've had?
Surprisingly, I hardly see any possums out here, so I finally saw my first one about a month ago, and I pulled over to go look at it.
Really?
Yeah, I hardly see possums out here. Now, Tyler State Park is really known for its raccoons. We have a lot of raccoons out here, and they are not shy to people at all. So, raccoons, I see them every day. Every day, no matter what time it is. But possums, hardly see them.
Really? I've got some possums in my backyard. I'll bring them up to you.
Perfect. I love them. Those guys are so cool.
All right. Best month to visit the park?
Every month? No. I do have my favorites. My favorites being fall. My fall to spring are my favorite months, but really, not just because I work here, but every month is a great month. You're always seeing something different. There's always something blooming. There's always a new animal that's appearing, whether it's insects, birds. So every month, really. But if I was to pick one month out of every year, it'd be November.
Really? Nice. One item you never hit the trail without?
Water.
Best view in the park?
Ooh, best view in the park. It had to be the lake. It'd have to be the lake.
What's more fun to spot, an armadillo or a raccoon?
Armadillo.
Would you rather lead a big group hiking or solo patrol?
Big group.
Favorite footwear, hiking boots or trail runners?
Hiking boots.
This is a controversial question for me, and we will not get into the politics of this answer. I will just go with whatever you say. Best for hydration, water bottles or hydration bladder?
I always use my reusable, so.
So water bottle it is.
Yeah, I had a bladder and it got mold in it. Not going back.
You know, perfect. We are in alignment. Best multi-used item, duct tape or paracord?
Paracord.
Dream animal to see on a hike?
Ooh. I mean, I have to dial back to snakes. I love seeing snakes out here. They're always a sight to see.
Mine is a mountain lion, and it has to be Guadalupe Mountain National Park. That is my favorite, my heaven on earth. And the last thing that I have to do in that park, I've hiked and backpacked it all, is to see a mountain lion. My recon mountain lion person just, I guess, retired from the park and heading up back to the East Coast. So I don't know what I'm going to do now, but that's my animal to see. All right. Are you ready for the most important question of the podcast?
Go for it.
All right. Getting this right, we will keep the podcast flowing. If not, we may have to end it early. So, what is your favorite of all time Texas hiking podcast.
Yours.
Nice. I love it. Hey, it warms my heart as a host. And so far, I'm batting 1,000 with that question. So I appreciate it. So before we get into the park episode, you know, it's important to me and it's also important to the listeners. I've said this a few times on past podcasts that I hear from the listeners and they really love this section of the episode where they get a little bit of information on you and it, you know, and kind of where you're coming from before we dive into the park. And I think it's important to me. It's wonderful to hear the passion that people that work in our state parks have. And it's, let me tell you, there's not been one person that's been on the podcast representing the state or national park where you can't see the passion that they have for service, for sharing the information. You see it in their face, you hear it in their voice. So it's been pretty spectacular. So I definitely think this is an important part of the episode. And also to my friend Todd, who lives by Tyler State Park, I was just talking to him a few minutes or maybe about 2 hours ago or so and asked him, hey, you do live by Tyler State Park. And, you know, he was absolutely, and he has a lot of fond memories of the park, especially growing up as a kid. So Todd, this episode is dedicated to you and I hope that it brings back memories for you. So Junior, how long have you been with Texas Parks and Wildlife?
So if we had this interview next week, it would be my 1 year anniversary.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. And with that being said, how long have you been at Tyler State Park?
So I've been here for a year. I started my TPWD journey here at the park. Okay. But that doesn't mean that this was my start for interpretation. I've been teaching nature education since I was 21. So I am 26. I've been teaching it for 5 years. Yeah, I started here September 19th of 2024.
Nice. So early congratulations.
Thank you.
So I love this question. What led you to work with Texas Parks and Wildlife?
So it's a long story. Growing up, my grandparents always took me outdoors. They are my roots to the outdoors. They always took me fishing, hunting. I was always helping out with the farm, raising cattle and whatnot. So I've always had my roots in the outdoors. Every weekend I'd go to the farm. Every weekend we'd be fishing or working at the farm, doing something outdoorsy. And then when I went to school, completely went out of left field. And I was like, let me go to engineering.
Boring.
Yeah, didn't like it at all. And that's no shame to the engineers who do enjoy engineering. I just realized that I wanted to be outside. So I went back to my roots and I finished my degree at Tarleton State University, where I got a lot of experience. At first, I thought I wanted to be a game warden. I'm not a game warden. I'm a park ranger. I thought I wanted to be a biologist. You know, all these things I really did enjoy, and I got some experience in all these different fields, but what kept speaking to me was nature education, and that's what got me to be where I am today.
And I don't remember if it was my episode with Catherine at Martin Dye's, but I learned that there's a difference between a park ranger and a game warden. One's the law enforcement aspect and the other is the informational.
Correct.
Yeah. And I don't know that I've ever like thought they were the same, but when she said it, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. A lot of people think that just because we're wearing this, everybody's a game warden. There was one time where I walked into a restaurant and I kid you not, they said, hey, it's a game warden. And I looked at them and I said, no, guys, I'm not a game warden. I work for the state park system. And he goes, oh, okay, we're fine.
That would be kind of funny. You walk into a store or gas station and people just start running.
Yeah, right? Like, what's going on here? Uh-huh. Yeah, I have had that happen a couple of times.
So, to someone that's never been to the park like me, how would you describe Tyler State Park?
It's definitely a journey. one that you should spend your time in. Don't just hike one trail and say, all right, I'm done for the day. One thing about Tyler State Park is that we have two different ecoregions. One is the piney woods, where you see, you know, the tall pines. And then if you go on the south side of the park, we have the blackjack savanna, where you see a lot more oaks, a lot more grasses, a lot less pine. It's more open. So you get to see two different environments all in one state park. And then, you know, when you're done, you can go be by the lake. And if it's warm, jump in the lake. But I've also seen people during the winter times take a cold plunge. So if you're brave enough, go to the lake. Our lake is spring fed, so it's crystal clear water.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That is one of our attractions, is the lake. So make sure that when you come out, try to spend as much time as you can.
So what do you think makes Tyler State Park unique compared to the other East Texas state parks? And like, for example, I've had Purtis Creek on, Aaron, the superintendent. It was pretty fascinating to kind of hear how he's described it. And then it really inspired me to really look up and start looking at the pictures. And it's just really spectacular. But what do you think makes your park unique?
Again, being the fact that our lake is spring fed, a lot of people come for our lake. The other thing that I hit on was that we have two different habitats. That brings a lot of diversity to the park, not only for plants, but birds and insects as well. We have 200 plus species of bird diversity here at the park. So that's a lot. We have a lot of beauty here to be found at the park. The park is rich with history. It's a phenomenal place to be. You know, I've never come to work one day where I was like, God, I've seen this too many times. Every time I hike a trail, every time I enter the park, I am in awe every single time.
Wow. And that's one thing starting this podcast I had no idea about, is how popular birding is.
Mm-hmm.
I had Hannah on with Choke Canyon State Park, and she gave me an education to the birding, and I was floored. And so I guess if you're a birder, here's another state park, hopefully, that you've already been to. If not, you definitely have to go check it out, because that's a whole lot of birds.
Oh, yeah. Birding is popular here. Another thing that people like to come out here and enjoy is, you know, like I said, the lake. So fishing, kayaking, canoeing, paddleboarding, our trail system. We have a lot of most of our trails are bike accessible. So we get a lot of people who come out to bike. So when it rains, we don't, it depends on the rainfall, but that's when we got a lot of unhappy bikers, because we have to, you know, close off the trails, make sure that they are safe for when the trails are dry.
What do you think is one part of the park that people, visitors, often overlook?
Something that it gets overlooked is going to have to be, in my opinion, Loop C is very, very pretty. It is just, you're just surrounded by tall pines. And you are just engulfed, and you just, how do I explain it? It's just, you're surrounded by these tall pines, and if you just sit and listen, you just hear nature's beauty. They're all interacting together. You hear the birds chirping. It depends on the time of the day, but you could hear frogs or crickets. A lot of the times people come and hike the trails that are the popular ones, like Whispering Pines, Lakeshore Trail, or Blackjack Interpretive Loop, you know, so those are the ones that people hit all the time. So I would say give the other trails some love as well.
Nice. So what is the history behind the creation of this park?
The park was created by the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, back in the 30s. The troop was 2888, and it took them roughly 5 years to open. Now, the opening date is kind of fuzzy, because if you enter our state park, it says open or created 1935 to 1940. Now, that's just because they were hosting parties and having people come in and out of the park from 35, 37, 39, and then it finally became open to the public as a park in the 1940. The CCC, they built most of what is here still today. So our camping structures, our buildings, some of the buildings are still CCC. The Whispering Pines Trail is the historic trail that was constructed by them. So that is the beginning of the park. Now, where they were housed or where they were located would have been where our now maintenance yard is. Now, those buildings that were here for the CCC. Those buildings are now gone, but one. One did survive. Think of our modern mobile homes. That is what they would sleep in or use, have their restrooms and stuff like that. And one of those buildings remained. And that building was their showers and restrooms, which now we have repurposed for our maintenance facility. So that is some of our history with the CCC. Now, the other part of the history is the segregation that we encountered here at the park. What had happened was people didn't like the fact that they were paying taxes for a park that they were not being able to use. They had listed a petition with the Parks Board. They were denied. But NAACP got involved. And early 50s, that is when the separate but equal, another entrance for colored people were allowed in. But it was just for day use. They weren't allowed any camping access or anything like that until the Civil Rights Movement passed in the 60s. And that is when all the additional campsites were also added. Now, there is some other history as well. You know, people of color did help build the park as well, along with the CCC. There also were people of color alongside the CCC who helped construct the park. There were times where, let's say, for example, we had an oil spill here at the park. It wasn't just the minorities helped as well to restore the park. And then when the dam had collapsed in the early 60s, the dam had collapsed in 1963. Again, the local community came out and helped restore the park. And that's pretty much our history. Now, there are some cool, fun things about what we did after the 60s. For whatever reason, they decided to have, what is it, bathing suit rentals.
Oh, gosh. I'll pass.
Yeah, so we used to rent bathing suits. Another cool thing, they used to have boat races. So that was really cool that they were doing boat races back in the day here at the lake. Now, our lake is only 64 acres. It's not that big, but they were doing boat races out here.
Do y'all have an official boat racing champion in the halls of trophies at the park or something?
That I haven't found yet. That I haven't found yet. Another cool thing that our state park did that most did too was have their own putt-putt course. So that was also another popular thing.
Is that still in existence?
No. Right before I joined, they got rid of it.
Oh. So what do you think are some of the most common reasons that people come to visit the park?
So I get this question quite often, whether I'm walking the trails or I am working in day use where I'm letting people come into the park and taking their day fees. This question comes out quite often. Where is the waterfall? So if you didn't know, Tyler State Park has its own waterfall. It was created by the CCC and it has been flowing ever since. Now, this waterfall isn't what you think of. Like, when I hear the term waterfall, I think of Niagara Falls, something that's large, and it's not. But people still have to go see it. It's awesome. It's cool. It's history. And that is always going to be found on the Whispering Pines Trail.
Okay. So speaking of trails, how many miles does a park have for hiking trails?
It's roughly 14.
Okay. And what are some of the most popular ones? I think you mentioned a couple already.
The popular ones is going to be Whispering Pines, Lakeshore Trail, and it could be Easy Loop or Blackjack Interpretive Loop. Easy Loop is less than a mile, so is Blackjack Interpretive Loop. Lakeshore Trail is a little, I want to say it's close to two, and then Whispering Pines is one. So those trails are the popular ones, and a lot of people just love to hike those trails.
And so would you consider all or most of the trails pretty beginner friendly, or and I guess great for families? Or do you have some trails in the park that, you know, probably are for a little bit more experienced hikers?
So we do have a rating system here, or a grading system. Now, if you're looking for something that's more family friendly, easy, and a casual hike, that would be Blackjack Interpretive Loop. That would be Whispering Pines and the Easy Loop. Those are going to be the easier loops that you could hike. Now, if you are wanting to increase your distance but still be easy, it would be Loop A. And then if you're increasing your distance and increasing your difficulty, then it's Loop B. Loop C is shorter in distance than Loop B. Loop C is about 2 miles, but it's not. It's a little more challenging than Loop B. And then last but not least, We have Loop D, which is a little under 2 miles, but it has the highest elevation. So that one is going to be our most challenging one at the park.
And what I love about our state parks so far, all the ones that I've been to probably around 25 or 26 of them. And it's whether they're 5 miles or 14 miles or 2 miles, it's really the way they're laid out. You know, you can really get them knocked out, connect the trails. You can really customize the mileage that you want. You know, most times they're connected to another trail, another loop, and it's like you really, I think, first off, whether you're an experienced hiker or a beginner, you really have the freedom to do whatever you want. And then also, if you're a new hiker or maybe you're new to map reading, you're never going to really be in a situation where you're going to feel lost or probably ever get lost. But you know, you can start to look at a map, start to practice reading a map, start to connect trails, and just use your map. Don't use a satellite on your phone or ping. Just, you know, really just paper map and really hone in your skills. I love when state parks come on, and, you know, I always do the research looking at the maps. And so far, all the ones that I've been to and all the ones that I've had on the podcast, the layout and everything is just spectacular for really beginners, intermediate, expert hikers, or if you consider yourself an expert hiker, they're really laid out and really for anybody. And you can really customize it to fit your goals.
You'd be surprised. A lot of people will come to the park to hike all the loops in one day. Now, that is about 12 miles. But again, like you just said, a lot of our trails are customizable. If you want to get on, let's say, loop A, but you want to get off on loop B, you can totally do that. Now, will you have to hike back to your car? Yeah. You know, that's why they're loops. You know, you start where you finish. But when it comes to my programs, I try to diversify my programs as much as possible. So if I'm ever doing a hike on any of my loop trails, I try to always take a different path, but always making sure that I'm staying on the trails. But yes, I like the fact that you can customize this trail system here.
Yeah, nice. So if we're on the trails, what type of wildlife should we expect to see there?
Mainly, it's going to be a lot of insects and birds. It depends on the time of day that you come out. If you're coming out in the morning, you might get to see some mammals, you know, your typical squirrels, your raccoons, whether you're on the trails or just hiking around your campsite. You know, you'll see your squirrels and raccoons, but you can also see them on the trails as well. White-tailed deer, that is a pretty common sight. Again, it just depends on what time of day you're coming. If it's in the morning, probably going to see them. If it's towards the end of the day, you'll probably see them. But if it's in the middle of the day, probably not. Now, another mammal you might see would be armadillos. I have had this happen where I've seen a family of armadillos cross right in front of me before I'm hiking. It was really, really cute. So, of course, I'm going to stop to see the armadillos. Now, our park does have a population of feral pigs, but the population is very, very small. So the chance of you seeing them are very, very low. I've been here for a year, and I've only seen them maybe this many times. So less than 5. So those are the mammals that you'll typically see. Now, something that I did see this spring that really, really excited me was I got to see a mom fox and her young. She was training her young right outside our headquarters. She was teaching them how to hunt.
Wow, that's pretty spectacular. Kind of going back to hogs, that's another thing the Lone Star Hiking Trail offers. At dusk and dawn, you will probably scare up a herd of 40, 50 hogs while you're hiking. So I have a phobia of hogs, and that's always so much fun in the morning when it's dark. The headlamp is leading the way, and then you see that there's a recent kind of rutting around for whatever they eat, and then all of a sudden all the squealing and the herd of hog running away.
it's scary. It's definitely scary. It sends chills down my spine every time I hear a pig squeal.
Yep, absolutely. So kind of going back to birding, are there any notable hot spots in the park if visitors want to come to catch the birds?
So it would be one of the three. So it could be blackjack interpretive loop because you have your diversity of high to low trees, whispering pines, and then it could be lakeshore trail. You're getting that diversity of height differences.
Nice. I can imagine the lake is a pretty big draw for you guys. What kind of activities do you offer there?
So we do offer boat rentals. We also participate in the Tackle Loaner program, which is where you come to our park store and you just ask us like, hey, can I borrow a fishing rod and reel? And we provide that for you for free. You just have to make sure that you return it when you're done. So we offer those services. Now, what do I offer as a park interpreter? So I offer fishing programs, you know, where I bring the supplies. Or if you have your own, you're more than welcome to bring them. But I teach the basics of fishing, you know, trying to get the youth or not so youth to get out there and get fishing. You know, there's it's pretty common to find adults who are like, I fished as a kid, but I never continued it. So I want to pick it back up again. So teach fishing programs to all. I also teach or also offer kayaking programs, you know, where you get to join me on the water, get to learn our ecosystem. Whether it's day or night, because I do offer night paddling programs as well. It's a very popular program. Those are the type of aquatic programs that we offer.
Nice. And so for kayaks, does that include paddle boards that you also offer, or is it just kayaks, canoes type thing?
So we have kayaks, canoes, rowboats, pedal boats, you know, with your feet, and then paddle boards.
Okay, and you guys rent those?
Correct.
Nice. Wow. So what are some of the safety tips that you would recommend to visitors coming out on the trails or using the activities in the water?
So when it comes to our trail system, you know, we recommend that you bring a liter of water for every mile that you're hiking. So making sure that you're hydrated, making sure that you are wearing the proper attire, you know, with our trail systems here, we do have some exposed routes, or we do have, you know, a rise or a decline. So making sure that you have that proper ankle support. And then when it comes to the trails during the summertime, you know, making sure that you're wearing, you know, sunscreen, sunglasses, hat, stuff like that, making sure that you're protected. Another thing is making sure you know where you're hiking. You know, make sure that you feel confident that you can tackle that trail, whether you're with people or on your own. So that is something that I would always suggest before you go hiking, is just having the basics. Now, when it comes to the aquatics, again, it's kind of the same thing. Knowing the basics, knowing your limits, making sure that you have water, making sure that you have sunscreen when you're going out fishing or swimming, stuff like that. Now, when it comes to fishing or swimming, making sure that you have a proper flotation device, even if you are the best swimmer, I'd still recommend having it on hand.
Yeah. And one thing with Martin Dye State Park, when Catherine came on, and I had no idea, but if you purchase or a day pass into the park, that you do not need a fishing license.
Correct.
I guess some of that fee goes to cover you if you, you know, if you're out there fishing.
So from my understanding, not every state park is the same, but I'm still learning. I do know that our state park does not require a fishing license because our state park encompasses the lake.
Okay. So maybe that's it, if the state park encompasses the lake.
From my understanding, if we own the lake, then, I mean, you still have to abide by fishing laws, you know, bag limits and measurements and stuff like that.
What about night sky there at the park? Is there any programs for stargazing, or do you guys, I know you guys wouldn't be considered a night sky park like they have at Davis Mountains or Big Bend Ranch, but how is the night sky there at the park?
Well, we don't have our dark sky or night sky certificate, you know, just like Big Bend and them, those guys down there near the border. But you still get a better view than you would in the city. So we offer star party programs once a month, and we actually start back up next week. During the summer, you know, our volunteers who help out with that program, you know, they are, most of them are college students, so they went on, you know, they enjoyed their summer break, and so we stopped during the summer, but we will be bringing it back this September. We actually are bringing it back, let's see, it is September 19th, and typically will be every third Friday going forward. Again, it's a real site beautiful out here. You get to see, like I said, you get to see the solar system much better than you would in the city.
So one of the reasons why I love the Guadalupe Mountains so much is it's kind of always equated to the black sheep of the national park, Texas family. So, you know, Big Bend is way more popular than the Guads. You look at Caprock, you know, Palo Duro is way more popular than Caprock. But my two favorite place, oh yeah, my two favorite places are Guadalupe Mountains and Caprock. And
love Caprock. I love.
Absolutely. And I love it because you get into areas where you never see anybody.
Caprock is massive place. When I was in college, I actually conducted research there at the park. So I got to see some backstage pass, you know, getting to see stuff that not everybody gets to see, you know. So Caprock is definitely one of my favorite places.
Yeah, and so, like, in the Guads, I'm out in the backcountry, never see anybody the whole trip, and I'm out there 4, 5, 6 days. Are there any places at Tyler State Park where it kind of offers the visitors some of those quiet escapes from the crowds, or maybe, like, little hidden gems where kind of people feel like the park is all theirs? They're the only ones in the park.
It would have to be... really, any time during the week, you could have the whole park to yourself. When it comes to the weekend, it's kind of unpredictable.
Yeah.
During the week, like I said, if you're here during the week or middle of the day, park is yours. You know. Now, if I was to pick one trail where I know I'm not going to see people, or if I do, it's going to be like one person, it would have to be any of our longer trails.
Talking about the amenities of the park and camping and stuff, what camping options does Tyler State Park offer to the visitors?
So Tyler State Park has 10 camping loops.
Oh, wow.
They are for RVs. You know, we have Cedar Point, which is just electric and water, no sewage. And then we have Lakeview and Big Pine, which is our favorites, or the public's favorites when it comes to camping, because it has full hookup. And then the remaining seven are going to be either tent sites, shelters, or cabins.
Okay. Do you have any primitive backcountry campsites?
So we don't offer primitive campsites here.
So are there any amenities that make the park good for first-time campers?
So we have shelters. And we have cabins. Those can kind of be your glamping, you know, intro to camping. Our cabins here are very, very simple. It's just bed, shelving, and fridge. And you get AC as well. And you're very, very close to your restrooms. It would be a real nice transition into camping if you ever wanted to go tent camping, or, you know, a transition into, now this is a very big jump, but getting your own RV set up. You'd be surprised. Someone comes out here and camps once and they're like, I need to get me a rig. it happens more than you think.
Yeah.
So when it comes to our hookup sites, they're booked almost year round. You know, it's not often. It's very, very often where I'll get a phone call and it's like, y'all are very hard to get a spot. People love coming here.
Wow. So that's one thing that I've learned with having all the state parks on the podcast so far. First and foremost, you know, and we've talked about it with the listeners, is you should always make a reservation. And I don't care if the park has one visitor a year, make the reservation, because outside of guaranteeing that you're going to get a spot, it also lessens the burden on the park staff to have to check you in. So I had Nick on the podcast at Government Canyons, and he had a camp host, and they like really paid attention to these processes, whether you had a reservation or not. And it was like 17 clicks in the system if you didn't have a reservation, and all the time, you know, all the extra time that it would take to enter in all the information and all the clicks, versus if you had a reservation, the information is already there and it's like 2 or 3 clicks and you're done.
Correct.
Yeah. So especially at the popular parks, you know, if you don't have a reservation and you show up, now you have a line of people.
That happens right often here.
Yeah, oh, really. So that was kind of going into the next question is, how do you guys handle busy weekends? And are there any tips for, you know, making sure that that whole process is not frustrating?
So we have a very good team here. You know, they're great. You know, they're really great at their customer service skills and making sure that they are getting in and out of people. You know, our office hours start at 8:30. And on Fridays and Saturdays, that's when people are coming to come check in, or they got in late Friday night and they're coming in to check in Saturday morning. So Saturdays and late Friday evenings is when our lobby is full. So we have about 2 to 3 check-in stations here, you know, so we're trying to get them in as quick as possible. And what I do, if I notice that they are swamped, is I go in there and I try to go help them out, you know, talk to the customers and try to alleviate that wait time, which is not that long. You know, something that has really, really helped our park staff is that we just received a brand new headquarters. So the building you see that I'm in is brand new. It's been open for about a year now. Our previous building was maybe 2 to 3 times the size of this office. So
oh, wow.
The increased space has definitely helped.
Nice. So what facilities are available for day use visitors?
So what facilities are available for day use? It's going to be our hiking trails. You know, if our park store is open, you know, they are more than welcome to go to our park store. We are actually lucky enough to have a separate building for our park store and headquarters. So again, if our park store is open, you're more than welcome to go shop there, go access our boat rentals, go access our tackle loaner program. The lake is also accessible within the hours of our normal park operation, which is 6:30 to 10. And then we also offer a binocular loaner program as well. You know, so if you want to come out and do some birding or just go look at things and you don't have binoculars, we offer that as well. That is what we offer our day-to-day day users.
Nice. So what about visitors with disabilities? What accessibility features does the park offer?
So with our trail system, it's very, very hard to have an ADA trail. Our terrain has a lot of exposed root systems or a lot of highs and lows. So, but what TPWD is trying to accomplish, or what they have been accomplishing, is the track chairs. I don't know if you've seen those where it's all terrain. So if, let's say, for example, someone plans their reservation well in advance and they reach out to us and say, hey, I want to hike the trails, then we could reach out to our region and request those materials to be here when they're here.
Nice.
Now, we offer, let's say for people who are hard of hearing, we offer listening devices. That way, when they come inside our headquarters, they can listen to what our headquarters information has, or learn about the park through those listening devices.
Nice. So if you look at the educational programs that you offer throughout the year, what types of programs do you have, and what are some of the ones that you're really proud of?
Honestly, all of them. Which ones are my favorites are the ones that I repeat every month, where people are begging me to increase, which is my night hikes. I do that once a month. My full moon paddle. We only have one full moon, so I do that once a month. So those are the programs that the people find very, very popular. Now, what am I proud of? It's literally any program that has more than one person.
No.
Because if I'm just teaching one person, you know, I'm still creating an impact in that person's life. You know, I've taught a program where it was just one person who came out and I had a really great conversation with them. And the next time I saw them, they brought their whole family. You know, something that I am looking forward to is Dutch oven cooking. I am hitting the ground running with Dutch oven this year. So that is something that I'm looking forward to. Also, because it's food.
Yep.
So those are the programs that I am looking forward to or proud of.
Nice. And for these types of programs, like the full moon paddling and some of the other ones, is the space limited where people need to be connected to the park, whether it's through social media or whatever other avenues. I don't know if there's anything else outside of social media, but you know, like space is limited where they need to make sure if this is something that they want to take part of, it's sometimes not where you can just show up and go, oh yeah, I want to do that.
So when it comes to our paddling programs and things where I have a set limit, those are available through reservations, and those reservations can be made through social media. I make a post on Facebook. I let people know on my flyers. I let people know on our state park page, you know, access the link here, and I make it to where everyone has a fair shot at getting it. You know, I say this link will be active at this time, this day, and one of my links filled up in 3 minutes.
Oh, nice.
People really wanted to get a part of that program. Now, that doesn't mean that if you didn't get a spot, don't come out and enjoy, or hopefully right. Get lucky. What I do is I set up an in-person wait list, you know? So if you come to the program and, hey, John Doe over here didn't show up, hey, you showed up to the program, you put your name on the wait list, you get to get in.
Nice.
And I have a set limit, too, because I'm only one person. But if I do have volunteers or other staff with me, then I will increase that limit as well. So I try to make sure that anybody and everybody is able to access this program, or any of the programs, for that matter. So when it comes to the paddling programs or archery, those are the ones that I have a set limit for. All my other programs, it's fair game.
Nice. And let me tell you, so I've been to the Quads probably between 23 and 25 times. I live in Houston. It's a 10-hour drive. And if you said, hey, let's go hike the Quads right this moment, I would drive the 10 hours, hike the weekend, and drive back. I love that place so much. And I have developed a relationship with one of the rangers there because Leah, she always checks me in, whether it's backcountry passes or front country camping. And she's always like, all right, what's the plan? And usually when I tell her, okay, I want to do this, 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 and this. And, you know, she's like, at your age, how about just do this? So she's like almost like a personal planner, helps. And even friends that I have that go to the park, same thing. You know, she's very knowledgeable. And I guess about two or three times ago, I was at the park and she was given a program. And usually when I show up to the park, I have never paid attention to kind of what's going on. You know, you're kind of, well, I am. I'm tunnel visioned. I'm getting ready to have a backpacking trip or connecting peaks or, you know. And so my focus is that and making sure that I'm ready. And, you know, I was in the little lobby and she's like, hey, I'm fixing to do a program. Do you guys want to join? And we're like, oh, yeah, sure. And so we were the only three. It was me, Henning, and Sam. And usually Henning and Sam are with me on all my adventures. And she starts giving this program about five gentlemen in wheelchairs that climbed the highest peak in Texas. And let me tell you, you can YouTube this. It's called Assault on the Mountain. You know, when they first did it, it's a documentary that they put together, I guess, in the late 80s or mid 80s. Within 10 minutes of her program, I'm in tears. She's in tears. Henning, you know, he's an ex-Marine, so his tears are internal. And Sam's in tears. That was the best thing that I've ever experienced. And from that day going forward, I was like, I will never show up to a park and not partake in a program. And my youngest was going to Corpus A&M. So we went down there to visit, and I'm like, oh, there's a Mustang Island State Park. Let's go check it out. Went there. They had a program. We went to visit the rangers, and they had the skulls and the skins. And I even got to throw spears at a bison, and it was a blast. So to the listeners.
Not a live bison, right?
No. And I don't know it was like a prehistoric bison or woolly mammoth, or it was something. And it wasn't like a spear, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a spear. And yes, that's it. And it was a blast. And to the listeners, I know I've said this probably on every state park episode, the amount of effort that these interpretive rangers put into these programs and the knowledge that you're going to gain and the amount of fun that you're going to have, it is well worth it. If you're there camping, if you're there just, oh, I just want to go for a quick hike or fishing, stop by the visitor center, see what's going on, connect with the parks on Facebook. So before you show up, you can see a calendar of what are the possibilities on your visit and get connected. And I tell you what, you will not be disappointed. So yeah, so Leah changed me, Henning, and Sam. We are all about the park programs and ever since that time, and it's not looking back.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, it's that effect that we love to have on people, you know. There was one person that didn't plan on joining my hike. You know, I started at a trail loop and they came up to me and they're like, hey, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, I got a program. We're about to go hike loop A. And they're like, oh, we're about to go hike it too. And I'm like, do you want to come join us? And they kind of wanted to be like, I'd rather go hike on my own. But then they ended up loving it. You know, they loved it. They were asking questions. They were interacting. They're like, oh my God, I didn't know this. And then when they left, they're like, I'm so glad I saw you. You know, it was fate that I ran into you. And I'm nice. Like, I just told them thanks for showing up. Because if they didn't, I would have been nobody.
Yeah.
You know, but it's those interactions that make it worthwhile. You know, it proves that what we're doing here, it has a purpose. And it's not just for the kids. It's for the families. It's for the adults. It's for everybody. Like, for example, I do some program or I offer programs that have a teaching element, but then at the end, to wrap it all together in a nice bow, sometimes I will offer a craft. And you'd be surprised how many adults want to build that craft.
Hey.
Yeah. I think I was building snow globes for a program that I was doing. And, you know, I had a bunch of kids that were sitting in front of me, and then I see the parents in the back. Do you have one for me? And I'm like, come on in. And, yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome being able to teach the littles to the bigs.
Yep. And you know, that Mustang Island, I built my own cordage. So that was part of the program. And I sat there and I'm like, you know, I was thinking, I don't want to take up a space from a little one in case they come up and they want to do it. Cause there was, you know, limited amount of spaces to do that. And they're like, no, come on in. I had the best time learning how to make cordage. And, so to the listeners, you know, I've been converted, get into those programs. You will not regret it at all. Thank you, Leah.
Yeah. I actually have a program coming up tomorrow, where I am hoping for a good turnout. The program that I'm teaching tomorrow, I don't know if you knew this, but Tyler State Park is the most burned park out of all over Texas. And prescribed burns is a natural thing that we are trying to bring back as a whole. But with us being burned the most, we always get the question of, why do you burn? So tomorrow, I am answering that question.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, I am putting on a program called The Nature of Fire. And how does fire help us? You know, explaining that fire has been a tool for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Talking about its benefits and how it helps the park, but it doesn't just help the park, but it also helps the nature. And then giving a quick little demo, I'm not burning the park, but I have my own little demo board where I'm showing what happens to an overgrown forest and what happens with a wildfire with an overgrown forest versus a forest that has been well maintained. And you can see the difference between that fire. So that is something that I am looking forward to, is bringing that and answering the people's question, which is, why do we burn?
Yeah, and you know, like you said, Native Americans have burned down forests, but have had burns where it's just a benefit. And I've been to a couple of state parks where it was that, you know, and it may be because they're close to a city, where it was disappointing that you could see the native vines and stuff have taken over the trees. And you know, I'm just like, oh man, guys, light this up. So at the park, and if we're looking at campsites, at trails, are pets allowed to be with the visitors?
Correct. So pets are allowed, just making sure that they are on leashes at all times.
Okay. And also pick up after your pets?
Correct. Yes. You'd be surprised how many people don't, and I end up having to pick up after them.
I'm not surprised. I brought that up for a reason.
Some people will put their poop in a poop sack and then forget to pick up their poop sack. You'd be surprised how many times that I have to pick that up. And mind you, I'm colorblind, so it's very, very hard for me to see a green poop sack when the ground is brown and green because it's covered in leaf litter.
Yeah.
So if I'm having to pick it up and I can see it, the public can see it. And
yes.
You know, littering is bad across the board. You know, you did half the work. Why not finish it?
Man, don't even get me started. There is not a trailhead on the Lone Star. I'm usually out there every Sunday hiking, and especially now that hiking season is kicking off. And there is not a trailhead, not a day where I don't see the remnants of a dog and or it's picked up and the little baggies left at the trailhead.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
That, and when I'm in the quads in the backcountry and I see orange peels, those are the two things where...
Yep. A lot of people think that because it's fruit that it is okay to be left outside, that orange peel takes a long time to biodegrade because once it's dried out, it's basically leather.
Yeah, and at the quads, the soil doesn't have the microbes that... We're going to break that down. Now, if you want to leave an orange peel and you're hiking in an orange orchard, okay, throw it on the ground, whatever, but not in my quads. So yeah, it's that's a common thing amongst all national parks, national forest and state parks is picking up after your dog and taking it with you.
That's something that I have found to really, really enjoy about my community here. They have a real sense of pride at this park. I do offer trail cleanups, but I only offer a trail cleanup if I start noticing a lot of trash. And yeah. I haven't done a trail cleanup since April of this year.
Nice.
People are really, really good about packing out what they packed in. You know, the only time that I start seeing a real heavy presence of trash is around major holiday weekends or when we had immense weather. So, you know, high winds, heavy rain, that's when all that stuff gets washed out from the trails and we start seeing more of it. Other than that, people are really, really good about picking up their trash. Even if it's not theirs, I have met so many people who are out there just picking up trash on their own. So people really love Tyler State Park and they want to make sure that their park is clean because it is their park.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And also to the listeners, if you're hiking, in my Subaru Outback, I have a box of trash bags. So, you know, if you hiking and you have a box of trash bags in your car, guess what? You have access to trash bags. You can throw them in your day pack and help improve whatever trail, make it better than when you got on the trail. And pick up the trash. So that's great. All right. So are there any, I don't know, new amenities, new improvement projects coming to the park in the next year or so?
So one of the newest amenities was the headquarters. A lot of people, even though the new headquarters has been here for a year now, a lot of people still come to the park and they say, oh, I haven't seen this or this wasn't here when I was last here. So a lot of people are still enjoying the new headquarters a lot.
Yeah.
That is one of our biggest triumphs was the headquarters. The next big thing that happened this year was we rebuilt one of our bridges here at the park. It had failed and it had connected Lakeshore Trail. Again, one of the most popular trails of the park. And with that bridge being out, a lot of people were not very happy that the bridge was taking so long to repair, but when it had fell into disrepair, it was during heavy rain season. So it was very, very hard to work on a bridge when it was muddy. But we finally got it done before Labor Day. And the outpour of support from the community was amazing. It has been since Labor Day. And not one person has carved their name in that wood yet.
Oh, that's right there. That's that you won.
Yeah. Yeah. Not, I have not seen a single person carve their name in that wood yet. There is no gum, no trash, nothing. And I go check the bridge like maybe like every week.
And that's funny. Like you said, like people that that haven't been to the park in a while and all of a sudden there's a new headquarters. That happened to me at South Llano. So, you know, I'd went a time or two and then hadn't been for a while. And we had a meetup there. And so I showed up and went to the house that used to be the check-in area. No, they have a brand new building and I missed it. So when you're coming into the park to the listeners, pay attention to the signs so you don't get lost.
Correct. Yeah, that's what happens a lot of the times is people just get tunnel vision. They follow the road and they know where they know where they're going and they completely pass the headquarters. And then, you know, we say, did you check in at the headquarters? And they say, what headquarters? They completely forget the big building they passed by. Or they look for the old shack that used to be the old headquarters. And when it wasn't demoed, because it just recently got demolished. You know, we would get phone calls like, hey, I'm waiting to get checked in. I'm at the headquarters. And we would be like, what are you driving? And they would describe what they're driving. And it's not anything related to what is outside our headquarters because they were at the old one, you know.
Yep.
So the new headquarters has been a real great addition to the park.
Nice. So I know we touched on a lot of positives of the park, but if you can kind of just boil it down, what makes Tyler State Park a great destination for families?
I don't think I could boil it down to one thing. It'd be kind of hard to. Essentially, the park itself is just an amazing place to be. You know, now this is going to be a little personal story for me. When I had applied to work here, my first time ever entering the park was on my interview. And when I entered the park, I kind of felt like I was entering Jurassic Park. I was going to hear like, da, na, 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 and it felt amazing. You know, it felt magical. Right. And it still feels that way every single time that I come to work. So just the entrance to the park is beautiful. Now, take a step further. The next thing, obviously the lake. You know, people love the lake. People want to hike Lakeshore Trail or they want to get in the lake. That is the next thing. You know, families love it. Like, right before this interview, the beach is full of families right now. So they're out having a good time. We have a designated swim area, so they know that they can be in one area, you know. Now, you can swim all over the park all you want, but we have one designated swim area, you know. I tell people we have a designated swim area so you know there's no hooks in it. Because people fish here, you know. So the lake is another amenity. Another thing that we have here is we have a playground, you know, so that's another good place for families to gather is at the playground. You know, there's benches and tables and grills, and you can be there with your family and your kids at the playground, as well as the amphitheater. Again, there's different amenities for families to gather and just spend time together. So Tyler State Park is a very family friendly park, and they have a lot of different things that we offer here.
Nice. So how do you think the park contributes to the local community?
In a lot of ways. So as a park interpreter, my job is for education and outreach. That outreach is me working with the local community and either me going to them or them coming to us. So when I first started, I wanted to create a program where I was going to somehow, some way bring out sheltered dogs. That was my intention because I had done it at my previous place of employment. So I reached out to all the animal shelters in my area that could. And the one that I landed on was the SPCA. I met with them and created a partnership to where now we have, I call it Barks and Rec, where they bring their sheltered dogs out for a hike. It's an extracurricular activity for the dogs, but it also serves as an adoption event for people. So I made that connection my very first month. So that's me bringing the community to the park. Another thing that just happened very, very recent, last weekend, we had our very first annual Veterans Suicide Awareness Hike. Now, this hike was for veterans and to create an awareness for suicide. But also what we did was, you know, other than the hike, we brought in the local community to show support to the veterans, to bring and show support to our active duty members to show them, like, hey, you know, we get it. Times can get tough. Here's support, you know. So we brought our local veterans, anybody that was dealing with veteran affairs, to the park. And, you know, we provided snacks and drinks and stuff like that. And those were donated via the community. I have an event coming up in October called Parktober, you know, Halloween in the park. And I am bringing in the local community again to the park, you know. Not this event isn't just for people who are camping at the park. This is open access to all. And I am bringing in local vendors, you know, the libraries, anybody who's putting on any type of educational program that isn't just the park, because education's out there. You just got to find it. And I'm trying to bring those communities to the park to show that there are other resources other than just the park.
So the first two programs that you mentioned, I got goosebumps. Those were absolutely spectacular. And it's wonderful to hear just kind of, I don't want to say thinking outside of the box, but seeing where there's needs outside in the community, and then you be a solution for those needs. That's spectacular. And my next question is, when you get these programs and you put them together, are you able to share these with the other parks of kind of some of the fantastic things that you're doing at your park? And then hopefully that ignites, you know, some of the other parks.
Yeah. So the veteran hike was, I believe a lot of state parks are doing that. Mm-hmm. So if you look on Texas Parks and Wildlife, you should see a post where it talks about all the state parks that are offering a veteran hike. Now, I don't know when that started, but I do know that we have a plan to offer that every single year. And hopefully that grows to where every state park is doing it. Now, when it comes to the Barks and Rec event that I created with the SPCA, that has been an event that I brought to my park for the first time. And when other state parks heard about it, you know, I had just only been working for 2 months, and I'm getting people from all over Texas asking me how I did it. And I mean, in my opinion, I was in awe, you know, because they saw what I did. They're reaching out to somebody who just started and asking me for help. And I'm like, I just started, you know, humble beginnings. You know, I'm out to help everybody and anybody. And I think I helped 6 to 8 state parks put that program together. So it's really, really awesome to be able to build these programs and just cause a chain reaction.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it definitely something special for sure. And yeah, I mean, hats off to you. And that's wonderful. I mean, again, I got goosebumps just hearing about those programs. So that's awesome. So let's say I'm there camping. I had a big day of hiking. I've done all the trails. Are there any local businesses or attractions nearby the park that would be worth the visit?
Yeah, totally. So now, in the beginning, I had told you that I just moved here, and I have been at the park for a year. So my experience with the Tyler area is about a year. Now, I love food. Got to go to good places. So one place that I really, really love going to are food trucks. If you can find one, eat it. It's so good. You're not gonna be disappointed. So go into Tyler, go into the local town of Tyler, or you go to Lindale, find yourself a food truck and get yourself some food. Now, me personally, I prefer tacos. So I'm gonna go find me a taco food truck. I have my favorites, but all of them are great. So I would do that. Now, if you want to step out of the food truck zone, you can go to Ruby's. Ruby's is a really popular Mexican food place here in Tyler. Another place that I send people to is called Mama's Restaurant. That is located also in Tyler. Again, never be disappointed. Love it. There's this place called The Diner. There's also a place called, oh Lord, it's slipping my mind. I can't think of it, but they offer, it's kind of like home style cooking. I can't think of it right now, but if it comes back to me, I'll remind you. And then there's this other place called, I think it's called like Texas City Music Grill or something like that. Barbecue. There's a place called Stanley's. It's right in the center of downtown. Chef's kiss. Love it. Really, really awesome. Now, let's see. I think that's it. I think that's all I can think of.
So I can tell you love food.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Once I get paid, like for the first 2 weeks, I'm eating out.
Yep. I hear you.
And then the last 2 weeks is ramen. No.
Yep.
I make sure to take care of myself. But when it comes to my night programs, where I offer night programs maybe once or twice a month, which is 2 weekends out of the month, those are the weekends where I go eat out because I come home, I'm tired, I don't want to go home and cook. So that's when I usually go splurge on some tacos.
So I think, you know, one of the main reasons why I started reaching out to state parks and small businesses that support our hiking community, like Trekker Joe's, Hilltop Packs, Marion Outdoors that have been on the podcast, is for the listeners to see and or understand how they can support these parks. So what do you think is the best way for someone to get involved in the park, whether it's volunteering, whether it's, you know, monetary donations? How do you see that?
It all starts with just coming to the park. And so, for example, last week when we had that veteran hike, I think I gained 2 or 3 volunteers just from that program alone. So just getting out there and taking that leap, you know, me personally, I'm trying to grow our volunteer base by a lot, go big or go home. So I am trying to expand our volunteer program here at the park. Me personally, as a park interpreter, I have my own set of interpretive volunteers, you know, people who want to be like me. So I have about 6, I think. Now, how do you start? It's just by dialogue, you know, joining a program, joining a hike, coming into the park for the day. And you're like, hey, I love it here. How can I help? You know, we do accept donations. You know, we have a donation box inside our headquarters. We also offer donations at our fire logs. So we provide our own fire logs, and it's strictly a honor system. You know, you can pay or not. It's totally fine. So that's one way to help the park as well. But really, it's just volunteering. It's putting your work and seeing the fruit of your labor. And people enjoying it, really. I have a lot of volunteers who come out, and just seeing the change that they can bring to the park is night and day.
Yeah, and I think you really hit that one. Is first and foremost, get out to the park, experience the park. And it's like, you know, like for me in the quads, there's not a time that I'm in the quads where I don't tear up, whether it's seeing her and all her beauty, whether it's leaving the park. You know, I get about 20 miles down the highway and I pull off to the side of the road, get in my hatchback of my Outback and just pop the back open and just sit there and look at her. Or maybe she's humbled me. So, you know, we plan to do the quad. So the 4 highest peaks in Texas, all not trailed. And, you know, she's stuck me with thorns and I'm bleeding and, you know, she's destroyed me with her, you know, she makes you earn it for sure. And yeah, it's just, I think you nailed it. You have to experience the park. And let me tell you, the motivation that you have after that, it's, sometimes it's pretty crazy for sure.
Mm-hmm. We have volunteers who travel all over the United States. You know, we get reoccurring volunteers. We call them park hosts who live at the park. We get park hosts all the way from the northern states of the United States, you know, and they make the trek to come to us for 3, 4, 5, 6 months out of the year and donate their time. You know, that's how much this park means to them. Is they want to make a 3 to 6 month commitment and trek all the way down from New York, Ohio, wherever, because they love the park, because they know that what they're doing, it affects everybody, it affects the community, and it shows.
So as we start to wrap up, can you share some of the feedback that you've gotten over the last almost year that you've been at the park from the first time visitors?
For sure. One thing is they're always going to come back. You know, I have been here for about a year now, and I'm starting to get my usual crowd, you know, where I will see them almost every time I put on a program. You know, they might hear me say the same thing over and over again, but they still love it. So getting to see the repeating faces is amazing. Now, I kind of want to dial back to what we talked about before. I forgot to mention it. A way to help the park system is just start becoming a state park pass holder. You know, it pays for itself. It's $70 for the year, but you think about it. You know, if you go to Tyler State Park 10, 12 times, it's paid itself off. If it's just you. Because for our daily entrance fees, it's $6 per person. So it pays itself off. It's an investment for sure. That is one way to help. Because that money goes to everybody, you know?
Yeah.
That's one way to help as well. I forgot to mention that. And then feedback. It's been nothing but positive, honestly. I don't think I've ever had one interaction where it was bad. The one that I've been hearing a lot lately is, we're glad that you're here because you're offering different programs. You're bringing in diversity. You're teaching new things. The programs that I offer is fun for all. It's not just fun for some. When it comes to my programs, I try my best to make them accessible to all as well. In my programs, you have my contact information. Let's say, for example, you see that I'm offering a campfire program and you email me like, hey, is this ADA accessible? I want you to be able to be there. So that's the feedback that I've been getting is I've been getting a lot of praise for bringing in different programs and not offering the same thing every time. And if I do offer the same thing every time, it is the programs that people want back. So I'm definitely keeping an ear to the ground and listening to what people want versus and what they need. And I'm trying to fulfill that. Essentially, I am a catalyst for them. I think I'm using that right. I want to make sure that I'm a good voice for the people and that what I'm putting out there is useful for all. And that's what I've been doing.
Do you ever hear stories from people that are visiting the park kind of tell you that, you know, how it was back when they were a kid and then, you know, now they're bringing their kids or the grandparents are bringing the grandkids?
I get that a lot, actually. When I first started, you know, my door to my room is glass, but someone looked in and knocked on the door and they wanted me to come out. I was like, yes, how are you? Or, you know, and they introduced themselves to me and they told me, they said, hey, do you know who this guy is on the picture here? And he pointed to somebody from the CCC.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, that's the CCC. Those are the good boys. He goes, that man right there is my uncle, my old uncle, my great uncle, I think is what he said. And he told me his name. And I, for the life of me, I can't remember it right now, but he told me his name. I looked it up the records and sure enough, it was him. So again, being able to tie their history, their family history back to that park is awesome.
Yeah.
When I offer these programs, like for example, Halloween in the Park or Christmas in the Park, where, you know, people come out and decorate, I hear the stories of, you know, my family's been doing this for 15, 20, 30 years and we do it every time we can. And, you know, my first year here, which was last year, and I got to offer the Halloween in the Park program, a family stopped me and they go, you see my son right there? He's 15 now. He was just this little when we first started.
Wow. And
that's just amazing, you know? That stuff is awesome. Or another thing, you know, like, for example, if I'm ever by the lake, I did get stopped by one person. You know, this guy was fishing and he called me over. And, you know, people just want to talk. And I love hearing people's stories. He was talking to me about when he was here when the dam had fell at the lake and how quick that water had escaped the lake. Now, the time varies between 20 to 30 minutes. But he said he was here and he saw it happen. And he's been fishing ever since. And that happened in the 60s. So hearing all these stories about Tyler State Park from as far back to the 30s to, I mean, obviously, like, let's say yesterday, you know, those stories still matter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. I really, really love getting to talk to our day-to-day customers here or just people who are flying in or not. I say flying through, you know, they all have a story. They all have a reason why they're here. It's nostalgic.
Yeah, for sure. So are you ready for the very last question?
Go ahead.
All right. For you to the listeners, sell the park, make it where the listeners throw this on their bucket list for this year to visit.
Okay, you want me to sell it?
Sell it.
Haven't I been doing that the last hour and a half?
You have, but, you know, wrap it up to a package that you can deliver.
All righty. So, if you were to come to Tyler State Park, there's a lot of things you should know. One, you're going to make memories. Two, you're going to have fun. Three, it's a beautiful, beautiful place to be. You know, as I just said, there are people who have who've been making memories here since the park has been established. There are a lot of sights to see. One being me. So if you ever come to my programs, you'll see what we're talking about here and being able to have some fun, whether it's with me or with your family. That's the whole point of this park, you know, is for you to be able to enjoy it, whether it's with your family or just on your own, you know. We offer a lot of different amenities here. Take advantage of them. They're yours.
Nice. Sold. I have a quick question. How far are you guys from Purtis Creek?
I want to say like an hour to two.
Okay.
I want to say an hour to 2 hours. It's in between that range.
Yeah, I'm thinking about hitting Purtis, spend the night, and then come to Tyler State Park. And
let me. I can actually answer that question real quick. Hold on 1 second. Let me answer that for you. I want to say it's less than an hour away, or about an hour.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
It is right at 59 minutes.
Oh, man, I'm there. So it'll be an overnight at one of the parks, and then I'll visit the other one.
Yeah, come on down.
Yep. I'll definitely let you all know. All right, Junior. Hey, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your Friday to come on the podcast. It's been a blast, and I think the listeners definitely will get a lot out of this episode, especially getting to know Tyler State Park. And especially, man, the programs that you're doing there they're pretty spectacular. So keep it up.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on your podcast. Definitely would like to come back again.
Absolutely. Hey, you got big projects or you got exciting news for Tyler State Park, you are always, always welcome.
Thank you.
So thanks again. And I will let you start enjoying your weekend.
Thank you.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.